why don't we get going, Sanjeev and the other girl. So, thanks everybody for being here on the summer solstice. This probably isn't the first place you had in mind on this day, but we're glad to have you all. We're here. This is a joint event with Plain Boulder County and New Era, Colorado. And Tim Hellman from New Era is on the panel. And we have people with great shirts also from New Era. It makes me think that Plain Boulder needs to get some shirts.
A uniform.
What? About like that.
Yeah.
We couldn't agree on the logo, though. Don't do that.
That's true. We're having trouble agreeing on the logo, so maybe we better hold off on the shirt. This is going to be maybe more more of an informal session than normal, in that it's sort of a working session, because with all due respect to Yale, we're not sure that the regs are totally worked out. Maybe they are totally worked out, but if they're not totally worked out, we want to sort of talk about what more needs to be perfected and how that would go. So we've got questions for the panelists. I've got questions for the panelists, and you all are encouraged to ask the panelists questions. And speaking of the panelists, we have our four people up here. And Yelgi Sean, who's in the white and the orange, is the city's environmental affairs department, and she's kind of the point person on the smart grid. Is that fair to say? In the energy piece. And so she's going to talk initially sort of to outline what the proposal is at this point. And then we have a renter in the form of Tim Hellman with New Era. And we have a landlord in the form of our own Francoise Poinsett, former city council member and member of many city boards and commissions. Mm-hmm. And then we have Ann Livingston, who's the county sustainability coordinator and is very involved in this smart loans program and everything. We're just going to begin. You know, the food and the rest of the beverages will show up, and there'll be interruptions, but that's okay. And I thought we'd sort of begin with Yale, sort of setting out where the proposed ordinance stands now, and what you expect. Okay. It's going to count on the text, right, for the second reading.
Thanks a lot for coming out tonight. You guys obviously do this with Plain Boulder County a lot more often than we host events at New Era up here. I think we might have started this trend, though, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Maybe after tonight we'll see if Plain Boulder County wants to do this with New Era ever again. We can try that. New Era Colorado is a nonpartisan youth political engagement organization. It's really targeting issues related to youth, kind of the 18 to early 30s. As I get older, we have to stretch out with youth. So maybe in a couple of years, 35-year-olds, maybe in a couple of years, 40-year-olds, all in the youth. The idea is that we really need to engage youth in the political environment a lot more. So we try to get youth, we offer a really neat...
So when you get on Medicare...
It's all about the youth of America. Everyone should be on Medicare, at least have that option, should they choose. So the neat thing is we are getting youth involved, high school students all the way to young professionals, and the renters issues is one that's very pertinent to our demographic of people. A lot of folks in Boulder rent, you'll hear a lot more about that. This is an issue very near and dear to us for a number of reasons, both the environmental impacts, all the greenhouse gas emissions associated with energy use in buildings, and tenants are really looking for basic rights in terms of their housing environment. So we'll talk more about that. But New Era, fun organization. We have some information up here as well if you guys want more information about New Era. This is a really big election year. I would argue to say as if all years aren't really big, but this is a particularly big one, and we need to turn out the youth vote in a major way. So I would encourage if anybody doesn't want to necessarily go and knock on doors with us, with Plan Boulder County to make sure folks are showing up this year, plug into New Era Colorado and we could use your support to help get this done. So thank you.
Is that the website name?
NewEraColorado.org.
Gotcha.
Yeah, check that out. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ken. So yeah, why don't you lay out the proposal for us?
Okay. All right. So, okay. So I'll just get started, and I'll just kind of lay the context. So we're in. This is a little bit tricky because our city council's on recess right now, and they went on recess right after we finished our first reading on June 1st. So we are planned for a July 6th council meeting, and on the calendar is the second reading. What we're proposing, and we won't get confirmation of that until Monday when the council agenda committee meets again after recess, is to have the second reading on August 3rd and still meet on July 6th, but actually be seeking policy direction on some alternative implementation options. And that's, as Alan prefaced, you know, there are some things to work out still. And one of the biggest things we heard was, you know, the council really wants it to be fair and effective, want us to build consensus, build partnerships. So we've worked out some alternative implementation options, and I'll touch on those a little bit. And then we're meeting with the community working group that we've been meeting with throughout this process since last summer, this Thursday, to get their input on those options. And then that will go into the memo for July 6th, and we'll be meeting with council on July 6th for the next meeting on this. So smart regs, I think, is most commonly known as the energy efficiency piece, but it is actually referencing the whole update to the housing code, which includes replacing the proposal to replace the housing code with the international property maintenance code, updating to the rental licensing code, and then there's the proposal that I'm going to be talking about, which is adding energy efficiency requirements for existing rental housing. And so the compliance pieces we're not proposing that those change too much right now. So the what would be required would be two pathways. One would be a performance pathway, which is using the home energy rating system, which is a rating system for looking at the performance of an entire building or house, residential usually. And the lower the number on that scale, the more efficient the property is. If you build to a current national code today, you're at a HERS 100. If you build a new home in Boulder, the smallest category of homes, you're starting at a HERS 70, and then it goes all the way down to a HERS 35. So theoretically, a zero is a zero energy home. And we're proposing that the HERS score be 120, so that's 20% less efficient than the national energy code today. Since energy rating can be, it can be expensive in this context, oftentimes it's used in new construction, we hired some consultants who did some really innovative work where they designed a prescriptive list that is roughly tuned to that same performance level of the HERS 120. And I got about 20 copies of the list, so if anybody wants those, we can pass those around. And just a caveat with that, it's a technical list. It's the kind of thing that, you know, when you want someone to fix your plumbing, you hire a plumber, it's that kind of thing. So it's not necessarily meant for anyone to be able to pick it up and be able to look at their house and be able to rate it accurately. There's a lot of technical details to it. And it's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing because we are planning on developing much more comprehensive user's guide to this, and we have some already. But the list is changing a little bit as we go through all our processes. We went through planning board and we had some changes to the list. Council has some suggestions, so we'll make a few tweaks here and there, but just that caveat goes with the list. So the checklist would need to be completed by a third-party trained professional. It does baseline the existing conditions. So properties that have already done upgrades or that already have energy efficiency features get points. So they already start out with a certain number of points on the list. We're proposing that a property would need 100 points for compliance. And the list is weighted. The points are weighted based on the impact to carbon dioxide emissions. And it also serves to prioritize improvements. So say somebody already has a good bit of insulation in their attic, but maybe it's not as full as it could go, they're not going to get as many points for filling that attic all the way as they would if they were starting starting with no insulation. So it prioritizes what the most cost-effective measures are in that sense for property owners.
Can we help surface of their roof?
that'll come next. They're not going to necessarily fall under this program. I think one of the innovative things, and one of the most complex things about designing this program, well, there's many complex things, but one of them is that our existing housing stock is so varied. There's every house is different, and there's lots of different housing types. There's condos, and there's HOA-controlled buildings. There's homes that were built in 1900, and there were homes that were built in 1970, and that just brings with it a whole other set of complex factors to deal with. And so this list does really approach that, and I think in a quite innovative way, by doing things like giving credits for shared walls or shared ceilings or shared floors. So an apartment unit in a big apartment building is going to start out with a large number of points already, just by the fact that it is more efficient because it has shared walls, shared ceilings, shared floors, those types of things. So that's all I'll say on the list for now. I'm sure there'll be questions I can answer. The program is designed to accommodate historic housing, and there's also some accommodations for affordable housing. And obviously, it's a pretty big proposal. I'm not going to get into all the details, so I'm just trying to hit the high-level points, and you all can ask questions on more specific things. So our initial proposal to council at first reading, which took place May 18th and June 1st, it was continued over two meetings, involved different phasing requirements on how compliance would be met over time. So the compliance is, again, it's the two pathways, the performance or 100 points on the prescriptive list. And the staff's recommendation was that it be cycled over two rental cycles, and the rental license cycle is 4 years, and so that a property would have to show 50 points, so it wouldn't have to get an additional 50 points, it would just have to show that it was at 50 points. So if it started at 30 points, it'd have to get an additional 20 points. It was at 60 points, it wouldn't have to do anything in the first cycle. And then at the second rental license cycle, it would have to go all the way there. So full compliance would be reached in 4 to 8 years, and it depends where you are in the rental license cycle. So it's a bit of a luck of the draw in that sense, and that's a criticism we've definitely heard, is that if your license expires in 2011, when this goes into effect, you're on the more 1 to 4 year rather than the 4 to 8 year, but your full compliance would be in 4 years, and so that's where the 4 to 8 comes from. So at the first reading and both to the public at the public hearing as well, we have heard a lot of comments to sort through. This is it's a pretty big undertaking, and so we are refining the implementation of that to really try to meet some of those comments and concerns that we heard. And as I mentioned, we'll be discussing that with the community working group this Friday. But one of the things that we're looking at is creating an implementation phase. So it would still be that if the ordinance was adopted, it could either be adopted to go into effect a year later than we had planned, or it could be that it was date certain. By 2018, all properties had to comply, and they could do it whenever they wanted in one time period. Those are two of the newer options that we're looking at. But those are coupled with what we're calling a pretty robust implementation phase. So just how many people have heard of the two techs and a truck program that we're planning? So most of you, but it's a pretty comprehensive one-stop shop for energy efficiency retrofits. And now that the, and Ann might speak to this a little bit, the county was awarded the Department of Energy's retrofit ramp-up grant. There's a lot more momentum and funding behind the two techs and a truck program. So what we're proposing is in this implementation phase, to say it was a year implementation phase, that we would use that time to incentivize rental property owners to come into the program and even have a set aside city funds and tax funding for rental property owners' participation in that program. All the other properties can still participate with the rest of the Climate Action Plan funding and then the countywide funding as well, but that there would be guaranteed a level of capacity in that program for rental property owners. And that we could really use that implementation phase to make any tweaks to the program that were necessary. So, for example, defining the hardship clause, that's come up a lot. So we have some ideas of how hardship can work into this, and there's two ways we're looking at it. One is there's a financial hardship that someone is a senior citizen on a fixed income, and they just really don't have the money for this, they're living on a fixed income. So we have a financial hardship built into that, and that's a little bit more straightforward. The technical hardship becomes a little bit trickier because it's not a one-size-fits-all program where you can just say, okay, homes built in 1909 are exempt. Because some homes built in 1909, you can insulate the attics, and some you can't. And so there is a technical infeasibility clause built into that, but this implementation phase might help us further define that. There's also been talk of spending caps. And right now we chose a point cap in lieu of a spending cap, and that's really to maintain the integrity of the program. The program is built on a target energy performance level, and so if you put a spending cap in place, it's really hard to manage equity within the program. So if someone is spending $2,000 on a new fridge, and someone is spending $2,000 on doing complete insulation and air sealing, really different impacts of that. And so to maintain the integrity of the program by having the energy performance, you know, a spending cap could be put in place, but we would recommend that the energy performance target is still kept, so it would just take properties longer to get there. So those are the types of things we'll be able to measure in the implementation phase, and then come back, if it was just a year implementation phase, we'd come back to council in the fall before it was supposed to start to recommend any changes. And if it was a three-year implementation phase, it would probably just go through the regular code update process. Do you want to address those specific questions you asked me, or do you want to let those kind of come up and let somebody else talk now?
It might make sense to take your chair for
you.
Yeah,
so I can wait to do that.
Why don't I ask you the questions I have, and we'll reserve other questions for everybody at the end. One of them was, what about landlords' claims that 8 years is too short a time period?
You know, I mean, ultimately, that's really a policy decision. I think that what we're presenting isn't really all that aggressive in relation to energy efficiency in general. So if you're looking at, I know it's a lot of people don't understand the details of the program, and so it might seem that some people look at the list and think they have to do everything on the list, and that would be a lot to do in 8 years. We did 7 case study properties. We've heard criticism that that's not enough, but that's the data that we have. And those properties all were able to meet compliance. All of them were at 50 points to start out, and the rest were able to get into compliance by doing insulation, air sealing, and duct sealing. So these are pretty low-cost, cost-effective measures that have been done in weatherization programs for 30 years nationally. So 8 years actually seems fair in that context, but ultimately it'll be a policy decision on whether 8 years is too long or too short.
Let me ask you the next question I had in mind. Thanks for that. Why do we need to act so quickly to save the climate? And this may be a policy answer too.
It really is. I mean, I'm not a climate scientist. I don't have a city staff position to necessarily take a position on the climate science. I could give you my personal opinion, but I won't do that. You know, some people. Council adopted the goal of Kyoto, which is 2012, and this program wouldn't even meet this sector's contribution of the Kyoto goal by 2012. So it's actually a longer time frame than the goals that are currently adopted by council.
The next question I had in mind, thank you, Pat, is Pat had in mind. What regulatory actions are in process for other residential properties and commercial industrial properties, and are we unfairly singling out residential properties?
So there are residential new construction and remodels and additions both have actually fairly aggressive energy efficiency standards and requirements. There was also recently adopted something
for
new construction and then for remodels and additions.
And you said before that was.
So on the HERS scale, if you're building a new home in Boulder, I think it's under 3,000 feet, it has to be a HERS 70. And then there's, I think, a level in the middle, like 3,000 to 5,000 square feet, that's, don't quote me on this, HERS 60. And then 5,000 square feet or bigger is a HERS 35. And then remodels and additions also have some standards associated with them. And then there was also a ordinance adopted for commercial new construction and remodels that's 30% more efficient than the commercial codes. This was next on the work plan. After this, the commercial energy conservation ordinance is on the work plan, so the commercial team in our office has already started work on researching what a existing commercial building ordinance could look like. It's just happening in phases, so I mean, I see the perspective that it might seem like landlords are being settled out in it, but coming after we've, you know, addressed new construction, remodels, and additions, and then moving into existing buildings.
And what if workers that aren't.
That aren't, right. Right. So it's not currently on the work plan to do that. That would be a policy direction if council asked us to address that. The thing is, this is actually another question you had, but I'll just kind of address it now just in this context.
Why not?
Is that, I mean, it's a little, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this, but it's essentially a classic market failure in some ways. When there's not really an incentive, the normal economic incentives don't exist in rental properties for the property to be upgraded. Whereas in owner-occupied properties, the person paying for the improvements is paying the bills and will see the return on their investment. And so oftentimes, rental housing is the last housing to ever get upgraded because the normal market economic incentive doesn't exist for it. And so we feel like with programs like the Two Techs in a Truck and this Ramp Up Retrofit Grant that's going to launch countywide, that we're going to see retrofits really ramp up in owner-occupied properties. And we can use that data to inform, is it happening fast enough for our policymakers? Is it something that we want to revisit and explore regulation on? But I think with all the programs that are coming through that are geared towards really targeting that kind of market incentive that's there for owner-occupied properties, maybe that's why it's not on the work plan right now. I mean, again, I keep defaulting to this, and it's not a pop-out, but it really is a policy direction that would need to come our way.
Are you on the commercial team?
I'm not.
Lucky you.
I got my plate full right now.
Well, Francoise is telling me to shut up, and I think she wants to talk from a landlord's perspective.
Well, I don't know. I tend to go next. I wasn't telling
you. How did you want to talk, Francoise?
Poor Yael has to do all the different points here. She hit both of them and my first point, which was that rental property energy efficiency is an economic
Can you stand?
Yes, I should stand. Okay. And, you know, we all know about it, the split incentive. And we're all human. And I have to say, as a landlord, I have to think twice often, okay, we're not going to get any benefit from this. But then I do think about it, and I do believe it does enhance my property. And when you own a property, you kind of have a lot of pride in it. And honestly, I do think as you put these in, I feel like the property has really been upgraded, you know. Now, I'm going to say this. I am not a major landlord. I am an incidental landlord. I'm not making claims to be one. But what I have done is taken at least 4 to 5 houses that have basically built, done energy-wise, and they were been like at zero with all these scores, and taken them to a energy standard. You know, two of those being houses that we have owned and lived in. And we always get the fixer-upper because that's what we can afford. Which brings to another point, we've never been like, you know, these landlords that we are always scrapping by and doing the budget thing. So I'm very, very aware of budget when you're doing these improvements. And I agree with, you know, this, when I first saw this, I thought, whoa, this was much more complicated than I had envisioned because I was on the Environmental Advisory Board and we had been promoting this for a long time, and I basically thought of it as a way to get, you know, really good insulation and some other things. This is much more detailed and, I have to say, comprehensive and a much better product than I had originally envisioned, and I'm very grateful for it. But that's always the double-edged sword. I think in that it is more comprehensive. People are going to be very confused by it, and there are going to be a lot of kinks to work out. And I want to congratulate Yael for defeating some of the things I've heard you say right now about having a whole implementation phase where we're incentivizing people, the early takers on this whole plan, I think should be incentivized and get some rewards. And that's one of the things I think is going to be really important, that we do this with fairness. But I think it kind of goes without saying, if we just sit back and hope it's all going to happen, we're getting so much opposition and showing why it's needed. People have owned these properties for many, many years and haven't done things. And honestly, it's not that hard to do. I'm not going to say it's fun. Really, some of the least fun jobs you can do is go down in a crawl space and get, you know, on your back and insulate. And I can't say I did it myself. I set my 19-year-old son down. I'm smart, you know. Pay him $10 an hour and he'll do anything. I'm not a 19-year-old woman. Now, his price has gone up, I'm going to tell you. He won't do any more for that price. But there's a lot of big things I think we have to talk about. that are going to go out to the community with this, because we're going to have to train a lot of people. That's actually one of my worries, is that we don't have a lot of folks ready and who had the proper knowledge to go out and actually perform it. So I think this is one of the things, an 8-year period, we're going to really have to be looking seriously at training a lot of folks to go out and do these retrofits. But, I mean, what does it take? It takes really being knowledgeable about the infrastructure and kind of going down check by check and actually being more aware of how buildings are in their current state. What we're dealing with here in Boulder is that the vast majority of the housing stock, the single family housing stock, is practically the same. And I say that because I want you to go do a visual tour of Boulder in your mind. Think about Newland, 1950s, French style house. Think about Martin Acres, 1960s, ranch style house. Think about Table Mansion, 1960s, ranch style house. Think about Baseline Subdivision, 1960s, ranch style house. I mean, we could keep walking through these neighborhoods and you see the same house popping through with some variations. Some are ranch, some have a basement, some are, you know, tri-level or whatever, but they're not that different. We do have our historical homes. That's where we're going to have a lot of need for discretion. But I think we can write up very specific rules if you have a cavity or you don't have a cavity. I mean, that's not like every historical house doesn't have a cavity to lower the insulation. There's going to be certain things, you know, with a large part of these, actually, you know, windows, everyone's going to have windows. And I noticed that they're giving... I'm assuming, I'm not really seeing it down here, but I'm presuming storm windows are going to be getting points, right? That's
in the bottom.
Okay, I didn't see the little box in front of my box. That kind of thing. Everyone pretty much could be starting to do storm windows. There's ways that landlords know to budget things in. Every landlord gets into this business knows they have to start a budget because you're going to have replacement costs. And I can say from my experiences, the energy retrofits I took... the house that I really use as a classic example, which is the Table Maker Ranch Style house, had nothing done to it when we bought it in 2001. Not a scrap of insulation in the attic, nothing in the walls, nothing in the crawl space, an old furnace, all single pane aluminum frame windows. And I'm not going to pretend like it's a zero energy house, but it's a nice, comfortable little house to live in now, and it looks so much better. And nobody's going to tell me that all those haven't been enhanced. What we did was basically started with the first week, putting in the attic insulation at the R40, which is probably at least R10 more than, so that took it from zero to R40 right away. It took a half a day, okay? My husband crawling around with his little dust mask on, hoping not to pop through the drywall. Not my son, because he was too young at that point.
Okay.
But I'm saying, people, this is not rocket science, and it shouldn't be.
You give
Tom
$15 an hour.
He gets dinner for free. That was a good mention. So when I talked about my cost, plus I must confess something, we actually got a lot of the insulation off of the house that was getting torn down. It was really, really cheap to do it. We've done other houses where we actually paid. I know for a fact that basic 1,000 square foot is around $350 for the insulation. Okay, so that's what we're talking, and they probably, some of the prices have gone up for an R30.
$350 per?
For just the insulation. We're not talking about the installation. I'm talking about what the insulation purchases were, and I might be wrong. Somebody in here can counteract that, but it's ballpark. And you can also choose the blow and cellulose. It's like a backwards vacuum cleaner. And I know I've talked to the guys at Home Depot who've never done it before. They do often 4 hours, 5 hours, actually... That's a long time to do it, even the folks at Home Depot. So it's just not that hard. That's probably one of the single most important things that has to be done. And guess what? A lot of houses around here, I would wager this house can have a lot of insulation. That's why we're so hot. People don't understand. That's what makes a house comfortable. So not only does it save on the utility bills in the wintertime, and that furnace isn't working so hard, so you're not going to hopefully have to replace your furnaces often because it's not cycling on all the time trying to keep up with the great outdoors. But people won't need air conditioning. They will not need air conditioning, and they might just get by with a little tiny swamp cooler in the window or something like that, very low tech, which is much more low energy. So I'm trying to say getting these improvements is really important. Next thing is, you know, doing the walls. The walls are important. They're not as important as the attic. Heat goes up. We all know this. This is basic stuff, but most people aren't thinking about it. And while they're more problematic, crawl spaces are also very, very important in basements, because a lot of that, you know, often your furnace is down there, and so the heat's going to want to seep out around those areas. So, and the other really important thing is, and I'm not really sure if this is addressed, is going around and being aware of the housing structure. A lot of these rental houses, you can walk in, the same son's son was living in a rental house as he was working on ours, living in a rental house where there was a gap this wide under the door. The windows, you could see the curtains every time the wind blew, just like going shh. There's the pane glass. We all know these. Their utility bills were astronomical. It was ridiculous. No programmable thermostat. Those things are so cheap to put in. I mean, you get points for it, and they're not even very expensive. All these things, if you go down and you compile them and you're just aware of this infrastructure, I really believe you can make a case and do it in a very reasonable time frame. For most houses, I'm not saying for all of them, the 8 years. The same thing I want to point out is it's a code issue. It's not just about the, you know, I know that, you know, I care very deeply about our climate action plan goals, but this is a code issue. The problem is all these houses were built way before right before the energy codes were in place. So we require code upgrades on all kinds of stuff. So I just think it's time to do it with rental. It is not the exception. Boulder is not the only one. The other communities that are doing it are in the United States, or ones you know of, Berkeley, San Francisco. And yes, they do it at point of sale. We happen to have this way of doing it, which will accelerate it, which I think is very wise, over the point of sale. But given that San Francisco has been doing this since the 80s, they've probably had quite a few rentals upgraded since then, for decades. Memphis just instituted one last year, and that is based on the tenants going in with their utility bills and saying, that's pretty high. I think you need to come and look at this house. And so it's a complaint basis, and if there's nothing wrong with the house, guess what? They have $50 a day fine to not get any complaints. That's Memphis. Mm-hmm. Look it up on the web. Last year, passed unanimously by the Memphis City Council. Hardly no discussion. I couldn't find any controversy at all on the web. So just look it up. Be my guest. Memphis Energy Web. State of Wisconsin did a lot of this work, too, for both rental and the whole state. And they did it with rental. Again, it's point of sale. We could go in the country. Germany has very, very tight standards. So why stop in the United States? I'm just saying, we like to think of ourselves ahead of the game, but we really need to get there. And I think this will be probably the single most important thing we can do. I mean, what we have done to date on the climate action plan. That's my own opinion. I know we've got a lot of other super exciting things in the work that will jive with this. Two types of attracting just so dovetail together. And it's taken us a while to get up, and I think this is going to make a big impact. And I think what's going to happen with this is we will work out the kinks. I believe we can do it in a really fair way. And I'm not at all for making overdue hardships. Can I say this won't cost landlords? I can't say that. It costs me. It will cost other people. But I don't think it's an excessive cost, and the fact you have a lot of time for compliance, you have to look at it like changing your carpet, which is also very costly, to look at it like painting your house. It's another thing, part of your upkeep. And it's an upkeep that should have been done, but the only reason it hasn't been done is for city funds. So I just think, you know, it's time to come and let's go for it. You know, do it again.
I think you've answered all the questions I would have otherwise asked. So let's move on to Tim. And Tim, one of the things I want you to talk about is whether all tenants are irresponsible assholes.
Irresponsible at times, yes. Assholes, occasionally, but I think we all are, so I think it's either. So I want to start out again to reiterate, I think there's something fundamental we need to understand here. I don't know if you guys care to know any more about my background. You guys had invited me to plan Boulder County about 3 months ago, I don't know, a Dr. Ramaswamy to speak about issues within the county?
No.
Dr. Ramaswamy was my PhD advisor. And so I was a young, up-and-coming PhD cohort that came through a program in urban sustainable infrastructure. And so we were one of the first programs in the nation that we're dealing with, how do we deal with issues of water, energy, food, transportation, in the context of an urban environment, which is the first time in human history we have more people globally living in urban environments than we do living in rural environments. So if you're going to talk about sustainability, anything is going to happen in the context of an urban environment. So the U.S. Department of Education said, yes, this is an issue of national need. We need people educated in this area. They funded Dr. Ramaswamy's program that got us through his PhD students. Through that process, we worked with the City of Denver to develop their climate action, their greenhouse gas inventory, and later their climate action plan. And through that, we learned a lot as a PhD cohort about what cities and mechanisms they had access to in terms of data and policy measures to actually drive the change they were legislating or setting goals towards in terms of climate action plan reductions. And they didn't have a lot of the data or the mechanisms to really do that as well as they needed to. So we are now happily employed trying to help many local governments and large companies try to reduce greenhouse gas emissions aggressively. And so I come here to you tonight as a renter, asking your assistance in helping us pass something where we've now heard twice there's a clear market failure that is being exhibited here. We're faced with something that everybody knows, split incentives. This is something you all need to definitely have down. Anybody not know split incentives? Basically, when the person who pays the utility bills doesn't own the property. Right? Now we're looking at about 20 to 30% of the properties in Boulder, only 20 or 30% of the rental properties, where the utility bills are actually paid by the landlord. So we're looking at 70 to 80% of the properties that are suffering from this split incentive, where you have people living in these properties, paying the carbon tax, paying the utility bills, and they have absolutely no say about the energy efficiency of the property they live in. And so we come to you asking you for help to update building codes to ensure that everyone in Boulder has access to a decent quality of life in the place that they live. And so we need help. And at some point, regulation has to come in and fix a market failure and say, you know what, there's a basic minimum standard here. And I would even argue, and many renters would even argue, that 20% below current energy code is not high enough for what we would like to see. But if 20% below energy code is all we can get, we need to at least get that as soon as possible. 50% of the housing stock in Boulder comprised of renters. So what are we going to do about this housing stock, and how, with the split incentive, are we going to do something about it? We come to you again asking for your help to help us pass policy like smart regs that takes into account lots of things we need to take into account. I appreciate that the landlords are here, and we need partnerships with landlords, because they are going to have to incur some costs and have to go through the mechanisms it's going to take to actually increase energy efficiency of these properties. I do a lot of work with the governor's energy office. We've got millions of dollars. The federal government's given $11 billion to stimulate economy around reducing energy use and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. But one of the single greatest things we could do in this community is ensure that we develop a proper marketplace to incentivize homeowners, property owners, where we have split incentives like renters, to make sure that they come in and they have to at least upgrade these properties to a basic minimum level. We need to do this. It's going to stimulate so many jobs. It's going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It's going to ensure the quality of life for all the community members here. Again, half of us. And a small percentage of those are CU students. Important thing to note here, that I'm a young professional. I rent. Many of the other folks I know in town are young professionals and they rent. So this is not just a CU student issue. Again, I may be ignorant at times, or what were the two things? I might be ignorant. And I might be that other thing.
Irresponsible.
Certainly irresponsible.
Okay. Tell them the shooters.
Right. I've got some if you want some.
Great, probably won't.
The other thing I wanted to say quickly, has anybody here made energy improvements to your house? A lot of folks have.
10 years ago.
Awesome.
When I bought it.
And what I'd like to point out with that is that what we see typically And I'm going to pass out just a couple of photos as I talk around this. There is the room. Basic things that people can do to increase energy efficiency of their properties right now.
You guys can pass these around yourselves, but I want to make sure that everyone realizes that
we find that a lot of property owners tend to upgrade the efficiency of their house if they're paying the utility bill. Novel idea. When you don't have that split incentive, people tend to do these things much quicker. We saw a lot of hands go up. And we just need to see the same number of hands go up in terms of what about the other half of the building stock that's comprised of renters who pay the utility bills and have no say in the energy efficiency of their property. What can we do to make sure that you join us and that we together provide a lot of jobs for people and we reduce energy use where we can and we provide a basic quality of life for all residents of the city of Boulder? So I'm really looking for your help in that. I guess to speak directly to the point about us being maybe ignorant? Irresponsible. Maybe I'm just really ignorant. Admitting this over and over again. So tenants, like homeowners, need to adjust behaviors. We, as New Era Colorado, have gone around the city canvassing renters, property owners, landlords, and we've already given the city council over 500 postcards of people who are in support of smart reg passing. Some form or fashion. We need to do this right away. I have postcards here if anybody here is 750. You have to do those. But what I wanted to say in the context of us going around the city and collecting feedback from people, so many renters we talk to are all telling us that they want to see these properties and they're pointing to holes and very simple things that they want to have fixed. That they're just like, look, there's no way I can do anything about this. If this property was more efficient and even if I was behaving in a less than responsible fashion, the fact that this property is more energy efficient, I'm going to inherently use less energy than I would have, even if I'm irresponsible. So take for granted that there will always be some irresponsible actors in the community, homeowners and renters alike. The city, the university, many individuals are working on education campaigns to constantly work with folks about behaviors. Mm-hmm. Quick question about some of that? Comment?
No, I'm just wondering, as a renter,
yes.
You're a landlord.
Yes.
You know, and landlords in general, maybe you get this.
Right.
And they think, okay, great, we'll do this, but now we're going to raise the rent. So
yes.
Flexibly, the rent across the border gets raised.
Do it.
Like,
yeah. So my point to that is, wait, what's happened the last 10, 20 years when there's been no energy efficiency upgrades? You've been jacking up my rent every year. So I'd say, you know what? There's nothing different than what you've been able to bank on. It's the fact that we've got a very high quality of life in Boulder, and we've got rental rates in terms of people filling these rates. We've got vacancy rates so low. You've been able to enjoy being able to charge whatever you want in Boulder because people want to live here, and they should live here. So I just would say to that, that okay, prices are going to go up. They've been going up, and you haven't even improved the properties yet. So let's do that first, and now you actually have a legitimate reason to hike up the rent on it every year.
So Tim, do you think there should be any formal education program that the city conducts for renters to try to get them to, you know, turn off lights and close windows and do pretty, and turn off appliances and do pretty simple basic things like that?
Yeah.
How about a green tag program?
What's that?
Like the open space one. You watch a video and then you get a green tag.
There are a lot of things being run right now that increase awareness and education among renters in the city. University of Colorado has got a couple of programs where they've been hitting hard through the CU Environmental Center, trying to set up little things about education, about energy use for tenants in their property. They've also got a program that's now providing energy audits and providing, I guess they're not really doing as much direct install, but they're providing, you know, CFLs for folks if they want to install those things in their properties. So the University of Colorado is a great partner in this and doing a lot to be very proactive about this. Of course, the city and the county are going to be doing a lot more all the time. And I would just reiterate that education alone, and everyone really needs to find this much more because I didn't when I was a young PhD student. But as soon as we educate people, then change will happen. Education does not lead to behavior change. It is not the sole factor that leads to behavior change. People know a lot of things that are good and bad for them. That does not necessarily mean they do or do not behave a certain way. So it's going to take more than just education. It's going to take long-term, probably generational transformation is what we're going to need to really drive behaviors like we need to get there. Energy efficiency and properties is a great place to start. I think continuing education programs, for sure. I saw a comment in the back. Yeah?
Tim, I have a question. You referenced that there's millions of dollars that have gone into the state in various programs for energy, but we can't find any of those that apply to for rental property owners. And I think if you talk to most people and say, why did you do energy retrofits in your home, a big part of what motivates people, all of us, are rebates and incentives. Mm-hmm. But none of those exist for rental property owners. Have you heard discussions with the state about this?
It's interesting. We're going to have Ann Livingston speak of some of the incentives. And I think that there are a number of incentives still available. In fact, I know a tenant. She happens to be a girlfriend of mine. A G girlfriend, not a... But my girlfriend lives in a really nice apartment and a landlord who's a very nice guy. And actually, he took advantage of Recharge Colorado. Is everybody here familiar with Recharge Colorado?
No.
What makes you be familiar with Recharge Colorado? Write that down and check it out at some point. It's a statewide new website related to what rebates are available to you, one-stop shop for energy. So check out Recharge Colorado. He went to Recharge Colorado, secured a rebate to get an energy-efficient refrigerator. My girlfriend's energy bills, she doesn't use a lot of energy to begin with. I don't know, she's some kind of wacko environmentalist, so I don't know. But her energy bill still, by just replacing the refrigerator, because she had a really, really old one in there, her bills dropped by over 30% from that refrigerator alone. It was the electrical drain on the entire house. And so I just want to keep in mind that appliances, rebates, are available to anybody.
What's the website address?
Recharge Colorado.
I'm sure you know those were sold out. Several weeks ago.
The appliance rebates there were sold out. We heard from the governor's energy office recently that only about like 5 or 10% actually claimed their reservation because it was a reservation system and you have 30 days. So I think we'll see some of those open up again because if people didn't claim them, they go to the wait list. But the city and the county both matched dollars through the governor's energy office for insulation, air sealing, duct sealing, furnaces, and energy audits. And those are still available. I just got the report last week. There's like 99% of that money is still there. And we've matched together, I think, about $135,000, $140,000 to the GEO's dollars. So those are available also through Recharge Colorado. So the appliance ones are the trickier ones to get, but there's still a lot of other ones available.
You
want to
clarify that?
Yeah. And just to clarify, too, Xcel Energy rebates are available to rental property owners, owner-occupied, it's tied to the meter. The only thing that I know of that's not available to rental property owners is the federal tax credit, which expires at the end of this year. Those are for not available for investment properties. It's for primary occupied properties. The governor's energy office has told me that if you own your properties as a corporation or an LLC, you can access all of the rebates. If you own it as an individual, there might be some caveats around that. I haven't gotten clarification from them on how that works. But that's the latest that they told me. So as far as I know, everything is available to rental property owners except for the federal monies. So federal tax credits, which expire at the end of this year, are not available.
So thanks.
Yeah.
Do you want to say more?
I don't know. I didn't necessarily have to say anything.
Can I just add one
question? I'm questioning some of your premises. The fact that rents have gone up in the last few years, in my mind, is caused by inflation. And the dollar value has gone down. So the plumber charges more, sometimes almost twice, etc. So the fact is that every cent that comes in is not profit, you know, for the landlord. I do have a rental property. I want to keep good renters. I keep the cost down low. I don't want the turnover. And if somebody is a good renter, they're there for 12 or 15 years. And so that's a goal of mine. I'd rather have that than the hassles of re-renting it all the time. So in a sense, I feel that there's a joint effort between the tenant and myself. it seems to me that having the tenant pay the utility bills, then he or she are aware of the use of those utilities, as opposed to if the utilities are paid by the landlord, it's like your mother and father has been paying them all your life, and you don't have to worry about it. So I think trying to develop the attitude of it's a partnership as opposed to an adversarial position might get everybody farther along.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I was talking a lot more smack than I need to there. I've seen a lot of other students who don't have as much. I've got a wonderful partnership with my landlord, and I totally agree with you. That's how we're going to do this the best moving forward. It really should be about a partnership. And I wish every tenant was in a position where they could develop that kind of symbiotic relationship with their landlords. I totally agree. And I think that why we're kind of asking for a renters with benefits campaign is to ensure that all renters, even if they don't have that kind of relationship with their landlord, are in a position to get the same benefit as those renters who do have that relationship with their landlord. So we're trying to facilitate that kind of partnership. Unfortunately, sometimes it needs to happen, and given the market failure, and I totally agree with you, I'd rather have the tenants pay the utility bills. It's good for them to be aware of that use. But given that split incentive there, we probably have to step in at some point with some sort of regulatory correction to that market failure to help to assist to ensure everyone's got basic. So I totally agree with you. There's a lot of things that are going into the price increases and whatnot. Do you guys want to get into some good incentives and stuff? Or
yeah. Can I just make one comment, though, that wasn't made during the whole thing about the rebate? There's also this thing when you are running your rental houses as a business called depreciation. So every time you make an upgrade and you cost it out for your permanent infrastructure upgrade, you get to depreciate that every year. And that really helps with tax. Like all those windows we install, they're depreciated every year. I get a little savings from that. And then just wanted to say, just to your comment, I think this is going to be a really good thing to improve relations with landlords and tenants, because I think it instills mutual respect. I think when a tenant feels like they are trying to do something to reduce their energy costs, but things are beyond their control because of the infrastructure, it makes it really hard to have that mutual respect going on, which is really conducive. And then that's when the dialogue starts. And there is a lot of dialogue with me.
So why don't we take more questions at the end, if that's okay, and move on to Anne. And we want Anne is the kind of the genius behind the Climate Smart Loan Program, and we sort of want you to say how that might apply to this proposal, and if you know what others. Well, we talked about Excel incentives, but there are other incentives out there that would apply.
So I'm one of the staff at the county that works on the Climate Smart Loan Program. We created the loan program as an adjunct to other financing that was available to property owners, whether they're residential or commercial. And part of what we're finding is a lot of folks have been squeezed out of the market on the private capital side. Either their credit scores are no longer high enough, when loan-to-value ratio requirements change, they no longer qualify for HELOCs or HELs to improve their structures, that type of thing. We also know nationally that not having funding to support upgrades to buildings is one of the major barriers to people actually doing work on the buildings. They'll go through the audit stage, they'll think about what they want to do, all of a sudden it's like, oh no, I don't have a couple thousand dollars sitting around to invest in my property. And that can be for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons that people haven't been making those investments, even if they could get some financing, was a sort of risk. The average turnover in homes in the U.S. is 7 years. So if you're investing in something major in the home and you're going to be leaving within a couple of years or not sure if your job's going to transfer or whatnot, and you're not going to make that money back, that's a financially risky thing to do. People don't want to do that. The Climate Smart Loan Program attaches the debt to the property, not the individual, so it takes away some of that risk. The other reason the county started the loan program, obviously the county has climate goals as well. We have both a Kyoto Protocol target and a long-term carbon neutrality goal, with financing being one of the major barriers to upgrading buildings, which are over half of our emissions countywide. Providing this program for greenhouse gas emission reduction purposes is one of our main goals, but we also provide the program as an economic stimulus tool to get people back to work. So over the past 12 months, we've put out about $10 million in project funding to the community. We've cut checks to almost 300 unique contractors, vendors, and installers, almost all of which are local companies. And 75% of the bonds which are used to fund the loans are purchased locally by local institutional and individual investors. And how it's different than private sector loans, unlike a home equity line of credit or a home equity installment loan, which you can use for a trip to Tahiti or granite countertops, whatever you want, the Climate Smart Loan Program is limited to energy efficiency and renewable energy improvements to the structure, and they have to be fixtures to the structure, so not appliances, since those sometimes leave when people leave a home. But things like insulation, some lighting upgrades, it's actually wiring, programmable thermostats, high-efficiency HVAC units, all kinds of things. I think pretty much everything that's on the smart regs list is eligible. The debt is tied to the property by way of a special assessment. So it's the same legal structure as other local improvement districts or special improvement districts. So the way that street repairs have been paid for in the past or wastewater treatment plants, that same legal structure. The debt is tied to the property. We don't look at credit scores, and we don't look at loan-to-value ratios on properties. That may change a little bit due to some recent federal guidelines that have been proposed, but those standards are not nearly as rigorous as what the private sector is imposing at this point. And that's because we look at tax delinquencies. If a special assessment is paid with your taxes, that's what we look at, that's what we care about. So it's a different sort of game than the private sector. The loans on the residential side are 15-year loans. On the commercial side, you can get a 5-year or a 10-year. A lot of apartment buildings fall under commercial sector. All other residential structures fall under the residential program. The minimum loan size is pretty small, $3,000. So if people are making relatively modest retrofits, they can get a smaller loan. We do offer loans up to 20% of the statutory actual value of the property, so what the county assessor says it's worth, not a private appraiser, or $50,000. Recently, the secondary mortgage market folks, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, issued a letter saying they had concerns with senior liens, which again are common to all local improvement special improvement districts, and they wanted to see some positive cash flow connected with these loans. As they were tied to properties, although, mind you, HELOCs and HELs can be used for trips to Tahiti, so it's an interesting argument to make. Nonetheless, right now, there are federal agencies on the energy side, Department of Energy, the administration, and others who are working with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to come to some agreement on maybe having some new parameters for these property assessed clean energy programs like the Climate Smart Loan Program. While we're awaiting federal guidance, we're also looking at an alternative loan structure, which would include a private sector partnership, potentially. So we're exploring that as an option to sort of keep our economy moving while we wait for them to resolve their interagency issues at the federal level.
Just residential.
Oh, yeah. That only impacts residential, not commercial. So we did get $25 million in a competitive block grant. A couple months ago from Department of Energy. About $12 million of that is coming to Boulder County for programs. Another $200,000 is available to our county and grant partners for training of the trade to get them up to speed so they can more effectively help us meet our goals. And there's $8 million set aside as a pool for credit enhancements for reserve funds, whether they be attached to the Climate Smart Loan Program or another finance mechanism, to allow us to reduce the cost to borrowers or reduce some of the risk to a private institution, and again, open up access to credit for folks who don't otherwise have it. About 3.9 and 1.6, so almost $6 million are going to the 2TEX program and its partner program on the commercial side, so helping with technical assistance, implementation assistance. So it was a term of 3 years, three-year grant. We have $1.1 million set aside for rebates for the commercial sector and residential sector. About $250,000 of that is set aside for residential. We are looking at using more of those rebates initially and sort of tapering down as time goes on. The idea is that these additional rebates will fill in some gaps. So if we have important technologies that we want to support that you can qualify for under GEA or Excel isn't quite there, those are the types of things that we'll be looking at targeting these rebates towards, sort of gap filling. Or if we know that some rebates for some technologies are too small to make a difference, we may look at boosting those a little bit. So that's what we're analyzing that now. And we are in dialogue with Excel as well, telling them the types of things we want to do under the two techs and PACE Energy Smart, which is the commercial partner program, and talking to them about whether their demand-side management program, which is what they fund their rebates out of now, is sufficient for certain technologies, or if they should be revising their plan with the PUC. So we have more units of rebates available in certain categories. So we're having that discussion as well. We did also set aside $2.3 million for microloans. Again, something that fits with the two techs and PACE Energy Smart model. These microloans are unsecured loans of $500 to $3,000. It's a three-year revolving loan, so much shorter term than the Climate Smart Loan Program, but ideal for low-income folks or potentially landlords who are making up to $3,000 worth of retrofit. That will be, as we're in conceptual design now, low to no interest, but supported by program administration fees. Again, shorter term, three-year terms. And the other big thing under the grant that I should mention is we've got a good chunk of change for social mobilization. So again, talking about some behavior change, but also talking to all sectors of our community about why these things are important, not just for greenhouse gas emissions reductions, but in terms of saving money in their own buildings, protecting local air quality, all sorts of other reasons. Go ahead.
So Ann, let me ask you one question right off the bat, and that is it true that the owner of a property with multiple units can only qualify for a single climate action loan?
That's not true, Alan.
Not true.
We have had...
do you want to repeat the question?
Yeah, so under the Climate Smart Loan Program, if you, say, own five properties, could you only apply for one loan, or could you apply for five? You could apply for all five. And that cap is per property.
Do you pay five closing fees?
Yes.
But those are small.
Because they're five loans.
So, Ann, thanks a lot. Let's open it up for questions to any of the panelists or all of them. So, Kirk, let me ask you.
I had a question for Neil about the seven proof of concept properties. Did you go back and do performance analysis on those to see what the actual energy effect was?
So not through utility bill analysis, because we didn't have enough time to get a long enough utility bill data. But the energy raters that that did the modeling went back and modeled each improvement to make sure that it got its expected value that they were assuming it would be getting through through implementing it. So they tested out the duct leakage and the air leakage, and they looked at the insulation to make sure that it was installed appropriately. But we haven't measured through utility bills.
Yes, guy next. Guy next to Kirk. There are two of them, not Leonard. The guy's not Leonard.
And so what's the status of 1A funding, Part A, going forward, or do you need a crystal ball for that? And Part B, is there any funding for private entrepreneurs who have an idea of, like, we could really enhance your social mobilization, or here's how we'd like to enhance the training, or some way magnify your efforts? Is there any thing besides the microloan, which is kind of a small entrepreneurial grant that folks like me could get?
Well, the microloan is for properties. It's not
right,
the
okay.
R&D.
Good. Well, that's what I mean, not that size, though.
We are doing what we've affectionately termed a mega RFP for the project. projects that are flowing through Boulder County. So most of the on-the-ground work that will be done under the grant will be done by people who respond to and are awarded, respond to the RFP and are awarded jobs under the RFP. Social mobilization will have some elements under that RFP, if that's something in particular you're interested in. The Climate Smart Loan Program proper, we have about $25 million that we can use out of the bonding capacity right now. Now, that's not counting the $3+ million worth of residential loans that were applied for by May 7th, right? Pretty much on the same day as the Fannie and Freddie letter came out. What the county doesn't want to do is put homeowners in a bad position if that issue isn't resolved and we don't have clean legal opinions. So what we're doing now is still advocating at the federal level to get that resolved and have some clarity so we don't put any property owners of residential property in a bad spot. So that's just something we're not willing to do to our community. So we're sort of holding on to that right now. We are talking with some other entities about taking up some of those projects using some private funding, but that's still an exploratory phase. But again, we don't want to put that local economic stimulus on hold while we wait for the feds, who are not always the fastest at resolving their own issues, to figure that out. So we are looking at a plan B in case they dawdle at resolving that issue. So.
Because that's what's going on now, the dawdling.
Yeah. We're working on two tracks. It's not the short one.
Great.
Leonard.
I have four questions. I'm only going to ask one. I'll wait until the end for the other.
Okay.
And that question is for y'all. And that is, how did the city arrive at the 120 or the 80% of code
right.
for the target versus actually needing code?
So it was based on, we had done, before these seven case studies that were modeled for this program, we had done 9 case studies just to understand what HERS ratings were coming in at, what energy audit recommendations were coming in. HERS ratings typically aren't done on existing buildings, so it was just gathering data. So we had those 9 properties, and then we had these 7 properties. And then we just asked our consultants to really recommend if that was the right level or not, basically, from all the properties they've seen in their experience, and then looking at these properties and the other properties that we had done. And so we just, I think from their recommendation as well, which confirmed what we were thinking, is that it just didn't seem reasonable to get existing buildings to today's national energy code. I mean, people could do that voluntarily, but from a regulatory perspective, it seemed like this was a more balanced approach to take. So.
More questions, yes, in the back.
So, Excel has offers lots of rebates for these incentives or for the measures. If there's the smart regs go through, there is all of a sudden a lot more motivation to grab these rebates. Is that going to change their DSM plan? Are they going to stop and try and limit what they're offering?
Yes, I'll finish my thought before then you can leave that. We talked to them already about the types of things we're looking at under the two tax program, which will be countywide because it's a grant, by the way. But they also do a quarterly review of the status of uptake of all of their DSM offerings, and they can adjust at any time. They have financially based incentives that come back to them where they really want to hit their targets. Thus far, under the current DSM plan, most categories have been undersubscribed. The audit program has been oversubscribed, and they've adjusted accordingly. But they can adjust quarterly, and we have given them a heads up about the size of the retrofit work we're looking at under smart regs and otherwise, and the types of technologies that we'll be encouraging people to do at the county level and potentially mandating at the city level.
Could you give us a sense of scale? Have you done the inventory? There's maybe 50,000 rental units or something, and then how many are just a major deficiency and would need a lot of work versus much less?
So the first part I can definitively answer. The second part is a little bit more of a guess. So there's 19,000, roughly. It's not a round number. It's somewhere around 19,000 rental units, licensed rental units, and that they're under roughly around 6,000 rental licenses.
Okay.
So one 35-unit building with one license.
accessory dwelling unit has to have a rental license, doesn't it?
It does, and that's one of the things we're looking at in this
okay.
next
yeah,
meeting, going back
yeah,
to council,
okay.
on whether or not it should be included in this
right.
program.
Right.
Yeah, and then, you know, I made some assumptions when I was just looking at the impact of this program, and I assumed that there was going to be a certain percentage that were already upgraded. You know, I think it was on the smaller side, maybe 15 or 20%. That had already done energy efficiency work. We don't have data really.
We don't, okay,
on,
that's the question.
You know, what the current, you know, we've been,
right.
of the seven properties we tested, two of them were already at the 100 point level.
Okay,
so
was that a random sample? And,
no, we actually
know?
Looked for high energy users.
Oh, okay.
We right. looked at one month's utility bills from the same month and did some analysis trying to look for where there was actually room for improvement so we could do some work
yeah.
and see what it
But comes. I guess the real bottom line is we don't really know how big the serious problem is in terms of people who will be affected dramatically by the new regs.
You mean the serious problem, like how much it's going to cost people?
Right? Yeah, right.
Right.
They to get a new license renewal. They
right. So we have the case studies that we did are all the, that's all
yeah.
the data that
okay.
we have. We know
yeah.
that we have some data from things like the Climate Smart Loan Program and
mm-hmm.
the Residential Energy Action Program. Most of those are owner-occupied properties. But I think roughly the average investment in energy efficiency is around $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 for energy efficiency. Those are voluntary, people
mm-hmm.
taking out loans or going through an audit program. But
okay.
we haven't been in rental properties really.
But countywide, over
mm-hmm.
half of the residential structures were built before 1979.
Mm-hmm.
So you can slice and dice this different ways. It's clear that there's a number of structures that were built where there weren't. Wasn't much in the way of energy code in
mm-hmm.
terms of building code regulation. It was clear that there's a lot of rental property. The percentage is slightly smaller in the rest of the county. Yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how deep the retrofits are in all the properties. So if you just look at our building stock, it's fairly old.
Yeah, Irv.
I've got three quick questions. One is, does the county program apply to the city also?
The county program applies to every piece of residential property in the county, except that those are delinquent on their taxes, and mobile homes, because mobile homes are taxed as personal property, not real property. So mobile homes, we refer to our weatherization program. Otherwise, every municipality, all 10 of them in the county, has opted into the Climate Smart Loan Program by ordinance. So all properties are eligible.
Second question. Is there somebody that I could call, we could call, to ask nuts and bolts questions? I don't want to take the time now because I know it's very complicated.
Yeah, I'll give you my card.
Okay. And the third one, if I can remember, yeah. Are there accommodations for historic properties? And I see one accommodation down here, and I didn't understand. Window frames that rehabilitate.
Right. So
rehabilitate who?
The accommodation is for rehabilitating the windows. So if you in either designated historic structures or buildings that are older than 50 years with wooden window frames, receive credit for rehabilitating the windows and adding storm panels. So if the windows are broken or cracked or leaky, you know, they have to fix the window and then add a storm panel, and then they get credit for adding a new window at the level of a U.25.
But there are other accommodations besides that one?
That's the only one that really would impact. I mean, there's obviously a solar system, which we don't think most landlords are going to pick for this requirement that would have to go through the landmarks process if that was an option they chose. But there's really nothing else on here that, you know, adding insulation, if you're doing, you can do it from the inside instead of the outside. But there's, again, the hardship is kind of built in for those categories. So if there's a historic property and they just can't meet this regulation without either, you know, damaging the integrity of the property, or it's just not feasible because there's no wall cavities or there's no attic space, then there's accommodations built into the program for those situations.
So more, Pat.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of conversation about something that some people call performance contracting, or the idea that a contractor comes in and you fix your energy bill at the current rate, and then without cash up front, it's paid off by the savings in the rate that goes to the contractor. Is that going on? Is that a big part of what's happening, or is
typically typically a commercial program. It typically takes place in commercial buildings that are large enough to have the economies of scale for it. So for a company to come in and pay for those retrofits and then recapture the savings, recapture the cost through the energy savings, you know, it's a factory or it's a big building.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens. We're doing it with some city facilities right now. So four city buildings are undergoing performance contracting. Typically don't see it in residential buildings because everyone's different, so the cost of them going in and doing the retrofits and the analysis on each one just drives their overhead up too much for them to make money doing it.
Yeah, Johnson Controls is exploring the residential property options. So far, under the models they've talked about at various conferences and whatnot, it does require some outside infusion of cash to make it work, whereas the commercial programs have been up and running for a couple decades and are pretty much tried and true.
And back.
Yep, you're the guy.
Okay. The sort of mega issue here is that energy's been too cheap and hasn't been a big enough a problem, right? I mean, it's oversimplifying it. So I'm wondering if the impact of municipalization discussion is having on this. Obviously, it's great. We need to move forward. Let's move forward in every way that we can. But I'm thinking about how much you've thought about that, and you know, changing the basic way the two-tier structure now that Excel has is the beginning.
Right.
It's a nice beginning. It could be much more articulated and elaborate, and get at this problem maybe in a simpler way. You know, this is great that we go in and try to get people to do this and this and this and this. But if energy were a lot more expensive, it would people would pay more attention to it.
I totally think that does not apply to this because it's a split incentive. That is the reason why it won't apply because of the split incentive. I mean,
but
that's the normal.
Well, you and I both have 10%. I get awesome results from I have a super efficient price, and people rent there because I can charge more for rent, and the energy is less, and it works fantastically
yeah,
well.
The problem is we still are the exception. There wouldn't be a problem. We wouldn't have to regulate if you walked around and. You are so an exception.
Yeah.
And now you're like in the 0.0001% of rental, of landlords. So I'm just trying to say, I think you make a very valid point, but...
But when the market just... Then the market could work.
This is the whole thing of we have to start implementing nuts and bolts energy efficiency measures across the board. It's a little bit like the same argument, and I go both ways given the day. About this whole thing with the BP oil spill. Everybody's going to be pointing, and rightfully so, their finger at BP, they're going to be pointing their fingers at the regulatory, folks. On the other hand, it's really hard to look at the mirror and say, uh-huh. We are the ones that actually we're going to have to get down to what we're using on a day-to-day.
Well, I totally agree. I'm just saying if the city is trying to achieve a certain result, and
right.
What's the easiest way to get to the result? And I'm just wondering...
Nope.
And have you guys or in the environmental? No, Francois, seriously, what's the easiest way to get? I'm just wondering what discussions have been had at the city. This is super complicated. If energy were more expensive, you might get to the result faster and easier. My own reaction. I'm just saying, has the discussion been had? What's the easiest way to get?
Well,
to
don't worry. Excel's rates are going to go up.
They'll take care of that.
No matter how you slice and dice it, you have to come at it from all angles.
Yeah.
So there's no one side, there's no silver bullet. So, we need to use less. We need to use it more efficiently what we are using, and we need cleaner energy, and we need better, less transport, less vehicle miles traveled. And without all of those, that's kind of how the city, I think maybe the county as well, look at it, is that there's no silver bullet. So just municipalizing and getting more expensive energy.
Well, I'm not
advocating
that. I'm just saying, what's the discussion that they have?
So the discussion is that there's all the strategies have to come together to make the pieces of the pie.
Kind of along the lines of David's question, and I know you guys probably fully went through all of this. Was it looked at a way of labeling properties, sharing their energy bills, and so the tenants could, the market could work in their favor.
Yeah, and there's a lot of complexities that come along with data. That's a whole other set of issues, but one of the things we're proposing, I didn't get into all the details of it, is that the city support a rental rating system, and there's some
private sector companies that are interested in doing it. Off-Campus Student Services also has their version of it, and they've been wanting to add some kind of green features to their database. And the private sector company that's approached us about doing it is interested in having kind of average utility bills that anyone can call up Excel and get average utility bills. And so having that listed and the tenants or landlords that wanted to list their actual utility bills, they could. Whoever had access and ownership of the data could. And then people could make more informed decisions. You know, it essentially depends on market transformation. There has to be awareness that's raised around tenants asking for more efficient properties. So it's a lot to put all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
But we're proposing it alongside this that properties that go above and beyond or properties that meet the requirements early would get recognized through that system, and this would be kind of the base for it.
Can I add to that comment really quick? Is Xcel Energy, when they were presenting to City Council about a month or so ago about the around the first kind of discussion about was the franchise negotiation completed enough, the City Council is going to vote, say, let's do it, let's put this to a vote of the people, yada, yada. One of the few things that Xcel Energy committed to as part of this franchise agreement, that they would participate in a data pilot. And I think that this is mission critical for this community to know if we are enacting these policies, if people are doing these things in their homes and businesses, we need to work with Xcel Energy out on the side to help analyze the utility bills to say, okay, we're seeing trends in this sector, in this general neighborhood, for these properties who have met requirements under particular codes, are we seeing a reduction in their energy use that warrants us to say, wow, this program is a great success. We can now take the results of this program out to the public and say, we should do more of this. We put people to work, we're reducing energy bills, this is great. So data pilot with Xcel Energy is a very important thing we need to make sure is part of this franchise agreement. So keep that one on the table because we need data. And so you guys know the Climate Smart Loan Program actually requires a utility bill disclosure as part of that so that the county can analyze the impacts of these programs, which is very important.
But yeah, but another answer to your question clearly is the county and city both are in the habit of engaging with the Public Utilities Commission to help with the utility regulation side. So we had filed comments proposing a tiered rate structure that preceded the PUC opening the docket that then resulted in a tiered rate structure. So we do work on the regulatory side as well. But when you are looking at people investing money in properties, the ROI isn't the same here as it is in, say, California or Boston or New York. And it does make it harder to sell, but that's for everybody. Then you also have this low incentive issue on top of that.
So, Lynn.
So, say you're a landlord and you put in just insulation and you have a 3-year loan on it and you charge your tenant 3 years of rent going up. So then after that 3 years, then you charge your tenant less because you paid off your loan now. And, okay, so their rent would guaranteed go down. It would go up for 3 years, but then it goes down for 3 years because you paid off your investment, right? And now it's just
Francois,
the
landlord.
And then, what I'm kind of thinking about is why didn't Obama just give out the money and not even make it a loan? Imagine if he did, just give out the money for doing all just insulation. Then wouldn't this automatically stimulate the whole government to want to have less energy costs and get off of utility bad resources of, you know, oil and things that are costly? Wouldn't that somehow backfit it? If they'd invested in it, if they didn't.
Let me get from one of those things, because they're totally different. The whole thing about the rent going up, I think, is a really
Are you okay?
He's okay. I think this is a really important question. In my mind, what really affects rent prices are these three things, and I'm not saying it's mostly, it is the market demand at that particular time of season you are trying to rent. It really is. It's that as much as anything. The second thing I would say is, how hardcore do you want to go with your rents? And I'm going to tell you right off bat, we probably offer some of the best. Our rents actually went down for the period right after we instituted all these retrofits. So, you know, I guess you could say we're not great business people. Probably not the best. But on the other hand, we've gotten really quality tenants that don't screw up our places. So it's like we don't have to constantly be putting in new carpets and all the other stuff. Although we've had to do some of that too. But so I'm just trying to say, I really think what you can charge for rent is not a big formula. And the truth is, the market has been weak in recent years. And I think that dictates more than anything what you can charge. But this is what I really think you get when you actually upgrade your property. If you're a good salesperson, you point it out. And you get the higher quality tenant, number one. You get the person who's going to stay there longer. I've had 0% vacancy, and I don't think a lot of people, that to me, that is really what I want, the zero. I don't want to be hassling with showing my place and doing all that. So that's a big feature. If you want to go and have to turn it over constantly, but if you want to have people will actually, when they move out, they'll tell somebody else and hopefully get somebody in for you. They'll do all your marketing. You know, that's what happens when you kind of shift it into a nice, quality environment. Second, about your thing about Obama, my feeling is that there's just, it's no money to do that. I mean, you know, that'd be way too costly, but you're talking about just giving away.
It's a lot cheaper because everybody's energy bill goes down.
Yeah.
And everybody has more disposable income, and the economy improves.
Well, you may be right, Lynn, but we're not going to influence more policy.
They did add a lot of money to low-income weatherization, but otherwise they're looking at leveraging private investment because you can't subsidize to that level.
Yeah.
So Leonard, do you want to ask a couple of your three questions?
This is the minutia now on the point list. And something that just really jumps out at me, which is kind of, I don't know, totally counterintuitive to what we're trying to achieve here, is giving points for cooling. There should be points deducted for cooling on an escalating scale.
For cooling?
Because if you do it right, you don't need mechanical cooling.
Right. So one thing we did add was giving points for not having cooling, which used to not be on there. And as I was mentioning, when I described the list, is it's tuned to the HERS rating system, which all of new construction, they just assume new construction gets cooling, and it's to a reference code house on that. So,
but maybe we need to start getting away from the assumptions that we've made in the past, because we're dealing with a different paradigm now. And then another minutiae point, which will be of interest to particularly historic property owners that have all masonry buildings, is you're only talking about essentially points for R values for wall, but masonry stores energy. While it may not have a high R value, it stores energy, whereas a stud wall with fiberglass does not.
Mm-hmm.
And you can factor that into this as well. So people are giving you credit for that new characteristic.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's a good suggestion. Good. I can certainly have our consultants look into the impacts of that and how we could adjust it. This is just, I should clarify that this list is definitely still not adopted, still in going through the process, so there's opportunities to propose changes.
So, younger guy.
I'm Jeremy.
Jeremy.
So a little different market, but Tim mentioned this earlier. The fact that tenant education is a big factor, and really, in my experience, it can make or break whether more insulation reduces energy bills, or people see that, oh, well, now my home is warm, I don't feel like I need to set the thermostat at 60, so they set it at 70 now, and it's a wash in the end. So this kind of goes to Yael. How much are you weighing education into the whole program? Just kind of keeping that in mind, hoping that that's a part of it, or
definitely.
Are there hard plans?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the future plans for education revolve around two techs and a truck, and that program includes an energy concierge who will be doing on-site education, also continuing to work with the CU Green Teams and some of their programs.
you know, it's a tricky line to walk in this because, you know, obviously from a policy perspective, all you can control is, you know, really you can't do anything around parent behavior. It's really just the fixture of the property and what's in it. And that's what we're looking at from a regulatory perspective, but we're more committed than ever to addressing the education piece and looking at for innovative ways to do that. Like as Tim said, education in itself doesn't actually impact behavior change. It has to be combined with other things, and so social mobilization is going to have a huge component of that. And just creating norms around energy efficient conservation or energy conservation behavior. So definitely heavily designed into techs and other programs that we're working on.
Certainly we'll go towards the point that, but
there's
if you really
point
want to
actually
like
on the list
for the county, then
yeah, I mean there's a point on the list for I think it's, I can't remember, I haven't looked at that part of the list in a while, but it's for, it says I think there's two behavior related points. There's one where the tenant attends an energy conservation class and that the landlord provides an operation training manual. So that's as far as it's included in here. It's 2 points. It's not obviously a huge amount of points, but it's trying to get it from a regulatory perspective. It's going to be a hard one to enforce.
But you could also do once somebody's living in the house and it's set up and their bill goes down over time, then they can get a benefit from that. They can get, you know.
Let's go with the hands here. Yes, Guy by Leonard.
So, Francois, I want you to understand I'm totally on board on the committee for a landlord to invest in energy efficiency. So I'm wondering, what is there being for me? I'm a landlord too. So what, I mean, there's quite a few benefits, as you described. You know, more marketable, higher quality tenants, depreciation of the expenses, Excel rebates.
Ask my landlady. She wouldn't insulate a door that I could see through to the outside.
Well, so
they just don't.
I mean, is it just stupidity? Is it just competitiveness? Our major problem with tenants, or what are the real major objections you're seeing that we need to help you overcome? Without calling them irresponsible assholes.
Yeah, I can see both sides of this. I've been in these, you know, stakeholder groups for. I get that it's an expense. It's an added expense, and when you're running, you know, as a business, it's somebody else's money that's being spent. You know, that's one thing I hear is it's easy to spend somebody else's money. So to make people spend money on this and that, you know, I mean, I don't know, Sheila, if you want to jump in.
Yeah, I'm gonna just like to hear
you've been
how it worked. I mean, you did some financial modeling, right? You said.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying that people shouldn't be concerned. I'm just wondering, when you really pencil it all out,
when
you really pencil it out, it is not that there is a split incentive. There is basically no incentive because these are additional expenses. This is not something that we're going to be able to gain back. So when you're doing business and you're looking at a return on investment, there is no return on this because, number one, as has been indicated, the major consideration in what amount of rent you can charge is driven by the market. It is not driven by individual property owners. We've had almost 2,500 units either built or approved, new units in the last 2 years. The supply has increased dramatically at CU for their housing. So we are looking at a very weak housing market and look at Boulder Property Management and see that they're giving away TVs. Well, if you're a property owner, it's not so great.
It's your money.
So if you're giving away TVs, that tells you that the market is not very good. So we have been hit with some very substantial costs that we did not anticipate, one of them being a major city expense that you may or may not know about called backflow installations that cost major property owners up to $50,000 and requires yearly upgrades. It came right out of thin air. I mean, you know, businesses operate on budgets, and when you have no ability to project what's coming, it is very, very difficult. In addition, although the people in this room, I think, would pretty much agree, and I've done my home for the same reasons you all probably have as well, people believe that this will have a real significant increase in the value of buildings because it's perceived as being something of value. But in fact, there is nothing in the market today that allows anyone to appraise a building at a higher level because of the energy retrofits. It's not a part of any appraisals that go on today. It's not a part of anything that a bank would accept. So that is a major problem. And in addition, every expense on a property is increased by the multiplier or the cap rate in effect in the market, and every expense is multiplied dramatically. So at a 6% cap rate, which is about where we're at today, for every $100 that is spent on an expense, which is what retrofitting is, it has the impact of decreasing the value of a building by $1,666. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we're going to be increasing the value does not hold water in terms of any kind of business analysis. So there's a lot of significant concerns, and nothing's been mentioned here, but new EPA lead paint regulations went into effect on April 22nd, which affect every building that's 1978 or earlier, and it is going to increase the cost of all repairs made on those buildings. And because this is such a new program, we don't yet know what impact it's going to have on these changes. What we know, for example, was that bids that were $15,000 on April 21st for windows were $42,000 on April 22nd. So we are looking at some very serious considerations from another government program that's working in opposition to this one, which, as you know, often happens. So this is not a clear-cut, easy kind of case. And in terms of education, you know, most of us try very diligently to educate our tenants. When you arrive on December 10th and the tenants have just left for vacation for a month, and there's three windows standing open for the month because they wanted fresh air when they got home, you know, it's a little disconcerting to be spending your money on that kind of thing. And, you know, no, we don't have all college students, but, you know, most people have pretty busy lives. And as you said, the energy costs are not so dramatic, especially when you're sharing them two or three or four ways. And so the motivation has not been there. So for us to be looking at these financial concerns and simultaneously knowing what we see day after day after day with our tenants, it is not a split incentive. It is a no incentive.
Assessed value and market value are two different things.
So let's just have one more question.
Well, no, I think this has been answered, but I really want to comment on the split incentive discussion, because the split incentive discussion you're talking about is with regard to capital improvements, whereas behavioral, you're on a day-to-day basis over a year, behavioral activities of the tenants are probably the larger part of the energy efficiency equation, and so that's why a lot of landlords have the tenants paying the utilities. Because they, you know, they leave the windows open and so on. So this idea of the partnership, and I was really glad to hear you had the education as part of the point system, there has to be something in the proposal that really works to build the partnership between the tenant and the landlord or the owner, because it's got to be a partnership. And I guess I do really, having been involved, I'm a non-voluntary historic designation, and I've got all kinds of problems going with trying to figure out how this is going to work. So,
man in the back with the Sunrise Stampede shirt.
I just want to ask a question about this
shirt.
What do the percentages mean to the right of the category? The R value, you got 25, 50, 75%. What is that?
Well, the percentage, if it's walls, it's how many walls. So if you have three shared walls, you go to the 75% shared walls, and that's the points you get. And
so
then
in a single-family home, and you've got them all, it's 100% across the board.
Right, but say your attic, only half of the attic is insulated to a certain level, the other half. It allows for just grading of the quality of the insulation. Yeah.
Look, it's almost 9, and I think we ought to end the formal session. I suppose many of the panelists, if not all, would be willing to chat with people afterwards. Pretty sure you pay.
Maybe if we bought you all another glass of wine.
And I don't see that Sanji's been collecting.
He's going to the door downstairs.
Oh, he's guarding the door. Okay. Well, make sure you pay what you owe. And thanks, everybody, for coming.